the TATS strategy, solving the efficiency crisis with triage, action, and testing. Join passionate automotive trainer and coach Andrew Uglow as he exposes the hidden costs of poor communication and ineffective information flow in the workshop. In this episode, you'll learn the three pillars of the TATS framework, discover why your instructions aren't yielding the results you expect, and understand how to align your team to boost morale and productivity. Along the way, you'll hear powerful lessons from the field, including a cautionary tale about a heater box repair that highlights exactly why triage and testing are non-negotiable for any business. I'm your co-host, Anthony Pearl, and this is the Frictionless Workshop Podcast. Let's get cranking.
So I love a good acronym, Andrew. You've written one down here for me as a talking point here, and we're talking about TATS. And at first I thought, wait, are we assuming everyone's got tattoos? Is that what it's all about? But no, it's not that. But perhaps this is the thing, and you're going to explain it. Maybe it should be emblazoned all over everybody because this is the problem, right?
Right. So TATS is the strategy or the structure that we use to address this issue of I've told them 1,000 times and I'm not getting a result. And so TATS stands for triage, action, testing. And again, I say this with empathy to technicians, and I say this with empathy to foremen as well, because for the technician, when the foreman comes to me and tells me to do something and I don't understand, or I don't completely understand, or I think I do, and I go and do what I thought was the right thing, and it turns out to be the wrong thing, and now I'm the one that has to back up to the mechanical butt-kicking machine, or I'm the one that looks like a peanut, and I get the public humiliation and the shame and the shade because I did what I thought was right and it wasn't right, but I didn't know it wasn't right. And so for the technicians, I have profound empathy, because if my instructions are bad, my results are going to be bad. It's just you can get lucky, and I've been lucky, but it's really hard. For the foreman, no one ever taught them, quote unquote, how to tell people. Issue here is not the information. The information is super important, super, super important. But the issue isn't the information. The issue is how the information is delivered. And the framework we use for delivering the information is TATS, right? We start with a triage and then we talk about the action. This is what I actually want you to do and how you know that you're doing the right thing. And then we have at the end a test. We want to make sure that what you heard and what I said are the same thing. Just as importantly, we want to test that you know what correct is. So when you've completed it, you can use this test to know that you've completed it so that you don't spend time you don't have to, or worse, do things we didn't want you to do, which in both cases aren't a good use of your time.
Let's get a couple of stories in here. Give me some examples of where this has prevented what could have otherwise been a mess.
Well, let me give you a personal example. When I was a technician, which is a couple of years ago now, probably a couple of decades ago now, but we don't want to say that out loud. I remember being given a repair order and the instruction was, Andrew, we want you to fix the heater box. And so I set about fixing the heater box. What I didn't know was that this was a repeat repair. I didn't know that the heater box actually comes out without having to remove the entire dash. And I didn't know that I should check that the part was actually in stock before I start doing the job. So I just got, here's my instruction, Andrew, here's your heater box. Car's on the hoist, off you go. Which, can I offer, is not an abnormal thing in the workshop. So I go, oh, heater box, no problem. So I start disassembling the entire front dash area of the vehicle. And an hour or so after doing this, and can I offer, I'm doing pretty well. Like, I'm getting into this quite efficiently. The foreman comes up and goes, Andrew, what are you doing? Maybe not those exact words, but you get the WTF. Andrew, what's that for? What are you doing? And I said, I'm doing the heater core. And he goes, that's not how you do a heater core. You just undo this, 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 and it should be done. And I've gone, oh, well, that would have been nice to know to start with. And so I then go to parts and find out that we got the right box, but we got the wrong part. And so I've spent an hour disassembling this car unnecessarily, only to find out that I now have to spend an hour reassembling the car because the part's wrong. And so I go back to, now here's, you're ready for the cruncher. So here's the cruncher. Andrew's now stressed and not without cause. Andrew's now embarrassed. Andrew feels very small and humiliated. And so they give me another job and they said something that I can't recall what they said. And so Andrew looks at the repair order, starts on this job and largely repeats the same mistake. At least this time I checked to see if the part was right. And so the cruncher was there was no triage in any of this. And particularly for that second job, because Andrew isn't in a state that he can act. I can see your lips move. I can hear the sound that your voice is making, but I cannot connect what you're saying with anything meaningful. It's eluding me entirely. And so this is the part of the triage.
I was going to say that is such a relatable little area there because that happens in day-to-day life, right? Where something goes wrong and your mind is distracted by a reaction to that problem. And then when someone starts talking to you about the new thing, you haven't really been paying attention and suddenly you've skipped the crucial bits and you're trying to fill in some blanks, but you're already in a negative space and then it's going to just exacerbate the problem.
Absolutely. I'm really behind the eight ball, like internally with my internal dialogue, with my emotional state, with my ability to access the resources that I have. I'm really facing some significant barriers. And so my ability to perform in that state is really, really low. It's not quite at the level of winning lotto, but it's moving in that direction in terms of likelihood. So we go back to the idea of triage first, action, and testing, which largely mitigates that situation from happening.
So if we've got that, tell me the positives as well. I mean, we're talking about, you know, some of the negatives where those things have you, how do you describe what it's like when it's actually working, when that system is happening? Because I think there's also the opposite can also be true, right? That people may not realize that they're actually doing the right thing and that that is something that they need to pass on and continue to do.
All right. So a great example of what it looks like when it's right would be like for the foreman, when you get really good quality on the repair order from the service advisor. So when the service advisor says, you know, noise in left-hand front of car when turning left over speed humps, that's really high quality information. It's explicit, as in there's a lot of detail here. It's tested in that what the customer said and what's on the RO and what's meant by the customer are the same things. Like we know that what the customer meant and what's on the RO mean the same things. And it's actionable. I know exactly how to go about testing that. We call it the QIM quality information model. If I don't give my techs good quality, if I don't give my techs good instruction, I'm making their life hard. I'm making my life hard. What does it look like? It looks like when I ask my tech to do something, they actually do it. They do it to the quality and the standard that I was expecting because that information was transferred in the instruction. And I don't have to quality check them because I can tell straight up that it's right based upon the test that they did at the end. I don't have to go and fix it for them. I'm less likely to have a comeback. I'm going to have more time to spend on the things that actually need me rather than the things that actually demand me. And they're not the same thing. It makes for a smoother flow. It addresses a lot of the bottleneck that we spoke about in previous episodes. Quality of information is king. So how do you know that you have quality information? Well, at the service advisor level, we use the quality information model or methodology, which is explicit, tested, and actionable. For technicians, when I'm giving instructions for technicians, I use TATS. I triage first, and we'll dive into that shortly. Then I give them correct action, like exactly, explicitly what I want them to do and why it matters. And then test, how do they know they've done it right? And how do I know that they've heard me correctly?
So talk to me then about, we've talked about the triage part, but what happens when the test part is ignored?
Oh, the short answer is they think they've got it right and they haven't. Well, you told me to do this, I did that, but I did it to my standard, not to the standard that you wanted me to do it to. And so that creates a lot of friction. You know, potentially can result in a comeback. And so the car comes back, worst case scenario, it's slipped through quality control. Customer gets the car, customer gets upset and not without cause. Comes back, gives the service advisor a good serving. You know, you're ugly and you smell and your mother dresses you funny and all these sorts of things. So now the service advisor's all distressed and upset. They come back because in dealership, and I don't mean to be rude when I say this, but the vast majority of times it's about the blame. It's not about cause resolution. And so they come back and they go, Andrew, what were you thinking when you did this? And here's the discussion with the foreman. Andrew, I told you to da-da-da-da-da-da, why didn't you do it? And I go, well, I did do it. Oh, well, it's got to be like this, not like that. Well, if that wasn't communicated, how do I know? Like, I'm not a senior tech. I'm not a foreman. I don't have that level of knowledge and expertise. If you don't unpack this stuff, and I usually get the pushback from foremen and they go, well, they should know. Yeah, right. They should know. But if they don't, how are you going to address that gap? Because that's on you if you don't. Because all meaning, and I can't say this loudly enough or strongly enough, all meaning of any conversation is on what the hearer understands, not what the speaker said.
The Frictionless Workshop podcast is brought to you by Solutions Culture. For details on how to get in touch with Andrew, consult the show notes below. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Now, back to the podcast.
And it's so important that because we've all experienced this as well, where you've been in a conversation, there's three of you in the conversation, maybe it's your partner and yourself and someone else, and you get back after that conversation and you and your partner talk about that particular conversation and you can interpret things in completely different ways. You sort of sit there and you go, well, that's not what I heard that was said. Yeah. And that happens in the workplace all of the time.
Yeah.
So, which kind of then begs the question, if you had to hammer this home and teach this quickly to make an impact on them, how do you do that? What do you say?
All right. So here's your Monday morning. This is how you do it. Short version. So just as a quick side note, I am working on a cheat sheet for this that you can take a photo of on your phone. You can create prompts, whatever you want, that will help you step through this. It will be available by the time the podcasts come out. But it's the TATS framework. So we start with triage. So the idea of triage comes from medical. Someone turns up with a broken fingernail versus someone that comes in holding their own leg that's no longer attached to their body. One of those is wildly more life-threatening than the other. And so triage is about addressing the critical stuff first. So the most critical thing when I'm going to give instructions is me. If I'm stressed, if I've just had a very unpleasant conversation with whoever, it doesn't matter, and I'm not in a good state to be able to give good instructions, I got to solve that before I go anywhere. That is step one. There's no point me turning up angry in front of the tech and unpacking instructions out of this internal stuff that's going on for me because it won't land. The second part is there needs to be, the tech themselves need to be in a state to be able to hear. So if the technician is stressed, is anxious, is frustrated, is having a bad moment, okay, I need to help them manage their state because until I do, they can't hear me. They might hear the words, but they can't hear the meaning. They can't make sense of it. And this is where a lot of the communication gets lost. The other element is, and this is the thing that you fix before you even start to have the conversation, which is a long-term thing, is there needs to be a measure of respect or rapport between me and the tech. Because if the tech thinks I'm a mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging, forehead-sloping, picking on him the whole time, evil overlord, when I give them an instruction, it will just come across as a demand if I don't have respect and rapport with that technician. And so it's crazy important that I cultivate that over time. So my state, the technician's state, and rapport. I've got to have those. Then I have to give them an outcome. What's the outcome? Hey, Anthony, here's your job. It needs to be fixed. Here's the outcome. Here's the whatever it is, the job. We then move into the action side of things. So action needs a couple of different pieces. I'm not going to dive into all of them right now, but the first thing they need to know is what to do and why to do it. Because if I don't have why, I can't know whether I'm successful or not, right? So Anthony, here's a brake job for you. You need to change out the brake pads and you need to do it in a way that the customer doesn't die at the end of it. Oh, okay. If I don't explain the why, or you need to do it in a way that is fast and efficient without killing the customer. Usually there's a couple of parts to that. The next part with the action is how. I might need to give them how. I might not. Depends upon the level of skill. But I've got to start with what I want you to do, why it matters, why it's important, and then we go into how. And then, of course, the last part is the test. And the first chunk of the test is, now, explain back to me what I just asked. And they go, fix brakes. Okay, good. We're some of the way there. Fix brakes. How? To what standard? Fix brakes in an hour without killing the customer. Right. Okay, great. You know what I mean. I know that you know what I mean. So when I come back and I check to see if you've done your job correctly, I can come back in an hour and I can see that it's assembled correctly in a way that it isn't going to kill the customer. Now, that's a lovely generalization. I would like to be more specific, but just for the sake of the podcast and time, there's my TATs. Start with a triage. What condition are they in? Because if they can't hear you, or if they can't hear what you mean, not going to end well, then explain the job, not just what to do, why it matters, and maybe how if they need the how, and then test. What did I just ask you to do? Explain back, give me feedback to me what I just said. And the reason we want the feedback, and this is really important, is when they say it out loud, they're also saying it in their head. And so they have to make sense of it internally before they can explain it externally. And so this is where the meaning part gets installed in the person that I'm expecting the performance from.
Drew, we touched on in a previous episode the hidden cost of what you're not measuring. And I think it's something that we've got some great feedback on and we want to expand on. So let's unpack that whole concept a little bit more. What are we not measuring and what is the cost?
Oh dear. So bit of context, there is an organization in America called Wrenchway, and they are specialists in helping quality technicians find quality businesses and helping quality businesses find quality technicians, but also helping both technicians and businesses that are working towards their quality get there. And so it's kind of a technician advocacy, for want of a fairly gross simplification. They published a state of the industry paper not so long back, and some of the results were heartbreaking. Can I offer? I read this and I've gone, you've got to be kidding me. Like, really? That was the result? But back to the question, and I say that by way of context because we're going to dive into that. One of the things that doesn't get measured in a dealership, and one of the big things that doesn't get measured in the dealership, is the cost of inaction. Okay, so we didn't do this. What does that cost us? And the reason that we don't measure that is because it doesn't have a line item in the balance sheet. In the P&L, there isn't a, we didn't do these things and it cost us $7 million. That isn't the methodology. It's akin to not tracking your lost part sales. You know, so a customer comes in and says, I want a widget for my thingo. And you go, oh, let me check to see if one's in stock. And parts go, sorry, we're all out of widgets for thingos. Well, that was a lost sale. So that was lost part, that was lost labor. That, like, if we'd stocked that part, maybe we could have got that sale. But we don't track that. And so if you're not tracking what you didn't get, you might have 7 or 8 or 9 inquiries for people wanting widgets for thingos. You only have anecdotal evidence. You don't have any reasonable measure for going, well, gee, we're getting a lot of demand for widgets for thingos. Maybe we should keep a couple on the shelf. And so I go back to the cost of inaction. because I didn't train my person, because I didn't my foreman, because I'm not closing the foreman capacity gap, well, we don't have a measure for what that impact is, but we do have the consequences all the same. So this still shows up in foreman burnout. It shows up in a higher number of comebacks, of silly errors, of things that quality control missed, of upset customers, of all of the things that then go ahead and consume my time that would be better spent otherwise on being proactive. And so I slip into this nasty reactive cycle.
Well, that's all we have time for in this episode. But if you realize today that your instructions are not landing because you're skipping the feedback loop, it's time to implement the TATS framework. To help you put these ideas into gear, we've put together a dedicated workbook that includes a breakdown of today's episode and specific activities to help you improve communication and reduce costly workshop errors. You can download your copy right now via the link in our show notes. Grab that workbook and start testing for understanding today. Make sure you join us for the next episode, where Andrew reveals the single most expensive event that could ever happen in your workshop. And surprisingly, it's something that never shows up on a standard report. We're diving deep into the massive hidden costs of losing key technicians and service managers and how you can stop that drain on your bottom line before it's too late. We love your comments as they help us frame future episodes, so please leave them wherever you're listening to this podcast. Don't forget also to like, share, and subscribe so you never miss that crucial conversation. This show has been produced by my team at podcastdoneforyou.com.au. Until next time, keep your workshop running smooth and frictionless.